Welcome to the Karate Shrimp Podcast. I'm your host, Sabrina Bleem. Join me in exploring all the ways we can perform better in life and martial arts. Our flight had been delayed for hours. When that plane finally took off, my mom and I were totally exhausted, but super excited. We had booked a tour in Egypt. This was a lifelong dream for both of us, and finally it was happening. This was November in 2010. We had just left Vancouver and we were heading to London. From there, we'd fly to Cairo for the start of our tour. About a half an hour into the flight, there was this massive bang and the whole plane started shuddering. The cabin filled with smoke. Everyone was freaking out. The flight attendants were losing their shit. They had no idea what to do. It was the most terrifying experience of my life. So no one was telling us anything. My mom and I were just looking at each other, petrified. We finally just held hands and stared straight ahead at the seat in front of us, just waiting. We all thought we were gonna die. We had no idea what was going on. We all thought we're fucking dead. All I could picture was the plane smashing on the Rockies, little bits of plane and bodies everywhere. This is all I could think about. The question in my head was, would I ever see my five-year-old again? You know, I'd never been away from my kid overnight before. This was the first time. And leaving the airport that day was really, really challenging. It was a teary goodbye. And I'm thinking, is this the last time I'm ever going to see my kid? So I'm sitting there with my mom, trying not to throw up from fear for what felt like hours. And then finally, the captain came on the intercom and he said something like, you know, we're experiencing some difficulties. We've blown a motor, but we have three more. So we'll probably be fine, but we're gonna have to dump fuel for the next while before we can safely land back in Vancouver at the airport. So for safety's sake, we had to fly around in circles, dropping fuel. So here we are stuck on this plane thinking, okay, we're probably fine, but none of us on that plane felt safe until that plane landed. So, and I remember looking at the plane when we got off, it was a British Airways flight. And on the side of the plane, it said dream flight, like fucking nightmare. So we missed our tour and we rebooked it for a week later. And then a week later, we had to face this fear now of getting back on a plane. That experience actually turned into a phobia that persisted for me for about 9 years. I'll talk about that more later in this episode and some other stuff that I've gone through, some other fears that I've faced. But what I've learned is, despite all the motivational posts online about fighting fear and getting rid of fear and all that, that's all bullshit. You cannot overcome fear. You cannot beat fear. You cannot kill fear. But the thing is, you don't actually have to. And fear often points us in the direction we need to go. So the big problem here is that fear holds us back from growing, from challenging ourselves, from self-actualizing, if that's something that you're interested in. And so we avoid doing things out of fear, right? But avoiding fear or something that brings up that fear response is really smart when it's actually a threat, right? But most often it's not actually a threat. We just get this fear response anyway. And our brain can't tell the difference between something that's actually a threat and something that's not that big of a deal. You know, whether it's a real threat or we're just imagining it to be, our brain can't tell the difference. And so what happens is we have this part of our brain, our amygdala. It's also known as our lizard brain, our reptilian brain. It's a really primitive part of our brain. And that part of our brain, it's there for survival and it generates this fear response when it perceives a threat in our environment, right? So it's there to keep us alive. And it's quick and reactive. It perceives a threat and then you get this fear response which stops you from, you know, being in that situation and gets you out of that situation for survival. And you know, way back when, the way human beings used to live, that makes total sense. You're living in nature, you've got something chasing you, there's a real threat there. You get that fear response, you're gonna listen, right? But with our modern lifestyle, often, not always, but often that fear is kind of irrational. It comes up in situations that aren't a real threat to our survival. So what this part of our brain also does though, is it protects us from making mistakes and from looking stupid. Because you think back to, okay, yeah, again, way back when, the way humans used to live, if you did something stupid, or foolish or whatever, like you could get kicked out of the group. If you did something that pissed people off, you could get kicked out of the group. And that would pose a very real threat to your survival, because then you're on your own in nature without the, you know, that safety net of being in a group, being part of a community. You don't have other people helping keep you safe, right? Being in a community is a good survival mechanism, right? It's really smart for survival when you're living out in nature. So standing out, looking stupid, doing something dumb, you know, pissing people off, that is a threat in that type of context. Nowadays, it's not really, but we still have this primitive part of our brain that's activated in certain situations. Our lizard brain tends to be activated when there's any kind of struggle, so like a fight or flight kind of situation, when there's attention on us, we don't like to stand out, right? When there's attention on you, you get that fear response. It also comes up when there's any kind of uncertainty, and also when there's any change, when there's something new that you're facing. So this can be, you know, result in procrastination, right? Procrastination is about this part of our brain. Anytime there's a change, uncertainty, whatever, we procrastinate, and that comes from fear. That comes from our amygdala, right? So we tend to stay in our comfort zone to avoid that fear response, right? And so we avoid struggle and uncertainty and having attention on us and change in our life, right? But we know that those are the things that help us grow. You know, you want to make a change in your life. You want to do something new and exciting. You want to challenge yourself, but you get this fear response because it's based in this primitive part of our brain. And the downside then, of course, is we lose out on opportunities because of this fear. So for example, in a modern context, it could be, you know, having this fear response come up and then you don't compete in martial arts. You're scared to compete, so you don't do it. You avoid it because you don't like that fear response. Or you don't perform at a belt test. You don't want to do a belt test because of that fear. Or maybe you don't start martial arts at all. Right? Maybe it holds you back from starting a podcast or a YouTube channel. Maybe it stops you from getting on an airplane, right? So that fear can stop us from doing things that we actually want to do. And what happens is we have this fear response and we don't like the fear. So we avoid the thing that triggers the fear. But what this actually does is send a message to that part of our brain, our lizard brain, saying we need to avoid this thing. So our lizard brain is kind of this like vicious cycle. Our lizard brain says, oh, here's an uncertain situation. I'm going to trigger this fear response, which is rooted in survival from way back when. And you feel that fear and think, oh, this must be something I should avoid. So you avoid it. And that sends a signal back to your lizard brain. Oh, well, it's worth avoiding. I better keep pumping out this fear response when they face this kind of situation. And then you get in this cycle of avoiding fear and that fear getting stronger and stronger. Okay, so the benefit of facing this and doing something about it and working on it is you will get more confident, you will feel braver, you will get stronger, right? You'll get better at handling every fear that comes up. So if you can face any fear, a particular fear, a certain situation, like face your fear of starting martial arts, then and you can work through that, then the next fear that comes up, you'll have evidence from before that, oh, I could actually face a fear and work through it. And then over time, you get more and more confident and you build up that skill, right? And then you get to do the things that you really want to do, and fear will no longer hold you back in your life. Some objections you may have about this is, well, people are going to laugh at me if I start a martial art in my 40s or whatever it is. I'm going to look stupid. I'm going to make mistakes or screw up. That could be at a tournament or a belt test. You don't want to stand out and look dumb. Everyone will know that I'm bad at this. You know, I'll upset people. I'll let people down. Maybe I'll lose. Maybe I'll fail. Or maybe, you know, it's actually a threat. Sorry, my cat is walking around my camera here. Maybe it's actually a threat and something bad will happen, like in the case of me getting on an airplane, right? So getting back to my personal experiences, I'm going to get back to the flight thing again, but first of all, with karate, I never would have started karate if I hadn't faced that fear and that doubt about, oh, I'm starting karate at age 41. I'm scared. I feel nervous. It's something new. I'm going to look stupid. I'm going to make mistakes. People are going to pay attention to me. I'm going to have that attention on me, right? But I faced that fear and it was fine. And I got through it. Another one is I wouldn't have started the Karate Shrimp if I hadn't faced fear, if I hadn't faced that imposter syndrome, if I hadn't faced all those doubts in my head that I'm not good enough, that people will judge me, you know, that I'll stand out in a negative way, all those things. I would never have started making videos if I hadn't faced my fears around being the center of attention. I've never been comfortable being, you know, the center of attention, and I had to face my fear around that. So back to the flights. So I did the trip to Egypt. It was great. It was right before everything went to shit with the revolution in, that was 2011, January, I think. So it was a good time to go to Egypt. But then I was actually fine that next flight, when we rebooked our trip. And it didn't really hit me until 9 years later. 9 years later, I didn't book a flight for 9 years, and I wasn't conscious of any kind of fear around flying. I think it was so subconscious. And I'm not a big traveler anyway, but I just like, no, I just don't want to fly. It's fine. And then we had a tournament we were going to be going to in Vegas. It was the Ozawa Cup, and it was Easter weekend in 2019. And I started feeling really, really anxious. I had this fear response coming up, and I didn't even think about that flying experience. I didn't even think about it. It didn't occur to me that that's what the fear was, because there was other stuff going on. The sparring division I was going to be in, for whatever reason, like every tournament I had been in up to that point, we all wore helmets, or most people did, you know, but there was no rule around wearing helmets. Like if you wanted to wear a helmet in sparring, you could. And that's what we all did, that, you know, everyone that I trained with, we all wore helmets. We all wanted to protect our head. And this one tournament in Vegas, there was this weird rule that we weren't allowed to wear a helmet in the adult division. And this freaked me out, because like, I'm thinking, okay, I'm flying somewhere, I'm on a trip. If I get injured in the States, I'm from Canada, like it's gonna suck. I don't want this, right? And so I was really worrying about this and getting really stressed. Sorry, my cat is being a dork. Anyway, she's in a bag, it's fine. So so I had all this fear come up, but I attributed it to not being able to wear a helmet. And it wasn't until I got to the airport that I realized, oh shit, that's what it is. It's about the flight. But I had this denial, right? And then I got on the flight and I was freaked out. I had to do a lot of mental work and breathing work and everything to get through that first flight. Like I was shaking, stressed out, but I did it. And like, I wanted to go on this trip. I wanted to go compete at this tournament. So I faced it. And then it was fine. And the flight back at the end of the weekend was totally fine. And I realized during that weekend that a lot of it was about, yeah, I was like, you know, phobia I had developed that I wasn't even aware of, but it was also anxiety. It amplified my anxiety around competing without a helmet. And by facing it, that fear started to go away, right? And then a few months later, I think we went on another trip, family trip to West Edmonton Mall. And I was totally fine. I was totally fine. That is the last time that I've flown. And I mean, COVID pandemic could be a factor there, but I'm not a big flyer anyway. But, and I'm sure every time that I get on a plane, I'm going to have that fear come up again. Cause that's the thing, is you can't get rid of it. You can't stop that fear response from coming up. That's rooted in biology. You can't stop that. But I've learned to face it and manage it, right? My kitty. Yeah. So there's applesauce on the couch behind me and beans in a bag on the floor. This is fine. So anyway, just a note here, I am not a therapist. And, you know, for me, the way that I handle stuff, I like to work through things on my own. And, you know, I've worked through some phobias. I'll mention another one in a minute here, another phobia that I've worked through. I'm really stubborn about doing things on my own, but I've also never experienced anything that was so debilitating that I needed help with it. Even back when I had disordered eating, I worked through it on my own. It was really important to me to do that. And by the time I actually thought to, oh, maybe I should go to a counselor for this, I was actually fine. And I did one session with this great counselor. And at the end of it, I said to her in full honesty, you know what? I'm actually good. I had worked through it so much on my own, but I thought I should go to therapy for it. But by then I was totally fine. So that's my the way I do things doesn't mean it's the way that you should do it. If you're struggling with something, absolutely talk to a professional if you've got any phobias or PTSD or anything like that. This is what I did. So this is not advice at all. So this other phobia that I worked through, it was around elevators. And I didn't realize where it came from. It took me a long, long time to figure it out. And it kind of snuck up on me. And at first I would just feel a little nervous in elevators. And then it grew so to the point where I would avoid elevators as much as possible. Anytime I had to go in one, I would feel claustrophobic. I'd get really sweaty. I'd be staring straight ahead, didn't want to talk to anybody. I'd feel a little bit nauseous and panicky until I got off the elevator. Okay, so if I had to ride an elevator, I would do it, but I avoided it as much as possible. And then this was like also, this really got pronounced, I think it was in my early 20s. And during that time, I was really getting into fitness and, you know, starting to go to the gym and that kind of thing. And so I convinced myself that it was, oh, I'm just being healthy. I'm taking the stairs instead of the elevator. It's for health. It's for my fitness, right? And so I would always say, like, someone would want to ride the elevator and I'd say, oh, no, I'm going to take the stairs. It's, you know, it's good for my heart, right? But it really was just I'd freak out in an elevator and I couldn't figure out where this came from. And then one day it hit me, like, this was so buried in my subconscious, I couldn't even remember it. So there was this one day where my sister and I, we got trapped in an elevator and we were visiting family friends. And I can't remember how it went. I think we were up in their apartment. It was this really old apartment building in Vancouver, really, really funky place. And we went down, I think we went to the car to grab something. I can't remember how it went. And then my sister and I were alone getting into this elevator. And it was one of those really cool cage elevators where, you know, you get in and you close the cage doors and then the outer doors close out on the outside. And so we went to press whatever floor they were on, second floor, third floor, I can't remember. And the elevator took us down to the basement. And the outer doors opened and we were still in this cage. The cage doors were closed and you could see through the cage. And the basement was all dark and dirty and dusty, and there was no one there. So no one had called the elevator down. And the elevator got stuck. We got stuck in the basement, outer doors open, in this cage, looking out into the dusty darkness. And this went on for, I don't know how long we were stuck down there. And finally, we got the elevator going again after frantically pushing the buttons, and we got to go back upstairs and everything was fine. And I didn't think twice about it though at the time. And I don't remember feeling scared of getting back on that elevator. But it was years later that this came up where I started getting a little panicky when I'd go in an elevator, right? Once I realized this, it hit me one day like, oh, that's what it is. I have a phobia because of that experience. So I'm worried about getting trapped in an elevator and having this elevator go down to the basement. And like, I was really into horror novels and horror movies and stuff. And so, but that, like, the, you know, actually doing that, having that happen in real life, facing those fears in real life, a real life horror story, I didn't want to experience that, right? So that, I had fears around getting stuck and fears around all the dusty, dark, evil things in the basement, right? So I'm like, okay, well, I want to get over this. I don't want to be avoiding elevators the rest of my life. I don't want to be having this fear response every time I step into an elevator. So one day I decided I'm going to face this. I'm going to work on it. And I'm going to do this like exposure therapy, which again, I'm not a therapist. I don't recommend doing this on your own. You know, if you need help with this kind of thing, talk to a professional. But for me, I knew it would be okay. I wasn't having like a full-blown panic attack or anything. Either way, I knew I'd be fine. Like, okay, I just need to be on this elevator as long as possible until the fear goes away. So that's what I did. I'm like, I'm going to ride an elevator and stay on it up and down. People are pressing whatever buttons. I'm moving up and down the floors. I'm going to stay on this elevator as long as I need to until that fear dissipates. And that's what I did. And that's how I got over it. It sucked. It was terrifying. I just wanted to die or like get off that elevator at the very next stop. But I did it. It took, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes. I can't even remember, but it worked. And ever since then, I still get a little fear. I still get a little, it doesn't feel like fear. Fear doesn't always feel like fear. Sometimes it's just, oh, I'm a little uncomfortable, but it is a fear response. And I would get that coming up. I still get it coming up when I go on an elevator, but I know what it is now. And I know it's not, there's no threat there. I'm not, going to get, maybe the elevator will get stuck, but it'll be fine. There's nothing evil that's going to come at me from the basement. You know, it'll be fine. So I face it and I work through it and it goes away. So the fear response comes up. I do the thing anyway, and then it goes away because it's not a real threat. How to solve this, how to work through this. Awareness is the most important thing, and it's the first step. You need to develop an awareness that the fear is present and an awareness that fear is what is causing that avoidance, right? Bring that into your conscious awareness. Take it out of your subconscious that you're avoiding the thing because of fear. And maybe you're telling yourself, like maybe you have a fear around starting karate, and you tell yourself that it's not about fear when it actually is about fear. It's that fear response. It's your primitive brain. It's your lizard brain speaking up saying, hey, this is a new situation. This is an uncertain situation. This is a change in your life. You're going to have attention on you. There's going to be struggle involved because it's martial arts. Okay. And it's a struggle because you're trying something new and difficult and challenging. Don't do it. Right. So this fear response comes up. You convince yourself, I didn't really want to do it anyway. Right. That's denial. And that's, so bringing that awareness to the reality that it's fear causing that avoidance. You're avoiding starting the new thing because you're afraid. And then look closely at what you're actually avoiding, right? And develop an accurate perception of the situation. Fear is normal. So bringing your awareness to that, that fear is totally normal. And that it comes up in these situations where there's uncertainty, newness, that kind of thing. And what it means there's nothing wrong with you. It's not your fault. You're not a fuck up. You know, you're not broken. Fear, that response that comes up, it shows that you're actually normal and your brain is working properly. That's what your brain does. You get this fear response. It's rooted in biology. You can't do anything about that. You can't stop it from happening. What you can do, however, is manage it, and you can manage your response to that fear, right? So awareness, look at what you're avoiding. Figure out why it is you're avoiding it. Okay, you have a fear around looking stupid, a fear around standing out, whatever it is. And then figure out a way to manage it, right? So you're shifting your perspective and kind of zooming out and saying, well, okay, am I actually in danger? Like in a situation where, okay, I'm getting on an airplane and, you know, I have this fear, like that, this is a tricky one because yeah, there's a possibility that the next flight I got on, a motor could have blown again. I could have gone through the same thing. But the chances of that happening are so slim. The chance of it happening in the first place was so slim, right? So what are the odds? Pretty fucking low. Am I going to, for me, I think, well, am I going to avoid planes forever and never get to go on these trips, never get to compete at these tournaments, never get to do all these things? Like, it's not really worth it for me to, like, based on that slim chance that something bad could happen. So I'm looking at it, I'm zooming out and saying, you know, am I actually in danger? Is this actually a threat? Is this actually likely to happen again? And for me, it's no, right? In some situations, you know, fear is a really good thing and it keeps you safe and it prevents you from doing dumb things that could put you in real danger. So sometimes it's important to, like, it is important to analyze this and say, well, is there actually a threat? And what is the threat and how likely is it to happen, right? But in most cases, it's going to be not a big deal. So you zoom out and realize there's no real threat here. Maybe I'll feel a little foolish. Maybe I'll feel a little stupid. Maybe I'll be judged. You know, I'm trying something new. I'm standing out, you know, drawing attention to myself. But ultimately, it's not a big deal, right? It's not a big deal. And then what you do, once you've brought that awareness to it and zoomed out and changed your perspective, is you do the thing you're scared of. If your lizard brain tells you to avoid something and it gets you to avoid it by triggering this, by pumping out this fear response, do the opposite of what your lizard brain tells you. So if it says, don't try martial arts, you know, oh, it's scary. And then you convince yourself, well, I shouldn't do it because I have this fear. It must be important. The fear must indicate that it's important to avoid this thing. There must be a real threat. Do the thing anyway. Do the opposite of what your lizard brain wants. And then what that does is it signals your lizard brain that, oh, you did that thing anyway. You started martial arts even though you're afraid. Well, it must not be a threat then. If you're doing the thing, it's not a threat. If you're avoiding the thing, your lizard brain thinks, oh, it must be a threat, right? Because of that vicious cycle. So you're breaking the vicious cycle by doing the opposite of what that part of your brain wants you to do. Like the more you give in to fear, the stronger that response becomes. And the more you just ignore the fear or just do the thing anyway, despite the fear, the weaker that response becomes, right? Your brain says, don't try karate. You know, your lizard brain says, karate is scary, it's a threat, whatever. Do the opposite, try karate. Your lizard brain says, oh, don't compete, don't do your first competition. Do your first competition. That's what I did when I started karate. I think I was a week into it. There was a tournament coming up, I found out about it. My lizard brain says, holy shit, don't do it, that's scary. You're only a white belt, you're 41 years old, you're gonna get hurt, you're gonna look stupid. People are going to judge you or laugh at you. I knew I had to do the opposite of what my lizard brain wanted me to do. So I signed up for my first tournament, even though I was afraid. So your lizard brain says, hey, don't start YouTube. Do the opposite. Start a YouTube channel. Your lizard brain says, don't start a podcast. Do the opposite. Start a podcast. Face it. And then that fear, you know, the fear response will come up, but then it'll start to get less and less and less as you give that different message back to your lizard brain that, okay, this is not actually a threat. Your lizard brain says, don't get on an airplane. Do the opposite. Get on the plane. That's what I did. With practice, this does get easier. And of course, it can be helpful to start small. You know, don't do something huge and scary at first. But start with something small where the risk is really low. And face that fear, work through it, do the thing anyway, and realize, oh, wow, I survived. It was totally fine. And that over time, you can build this up and try more and more challenging things and build that confidence and that skill along with it. And make note over time of your increased confidence and make note of how the fear does disappear for each individual thing when we do the thing that we're scared of. When we face it and do the opposite of what our lizard brain wants, that fear will start to get less and less and less. It will still come up, of course. You know, you can't get rid of that part of your brain unless you get some surgery, but like you're gonna have that fear response come up no matter what, but it's always going to be temporary. It's always going to be transitory. It's not something that has to rule your life or stop you from doing the things that you want to do. It won't last, right? It's just a knee-jerk response from your lizard brain. And try and reframe this then as an opportunity rather than a threat. Like fear points you in the direction you need to go. If it's something you're scared of, you probably need to face it. And when you do so, you get so much stronger as a result. Also reframe this as, you know, instead of an indication that there's something wrong with you, you're damaged or whatever, reframe it as my brain is functioning properly. It's doing what it's supposed to do. Thank fucking God. So build the skill of taking action even when that fear is present. And by doing so, that fear will become irrelevant.
Thank you for tuning in to the Karate Shrimp podcast. You can also find me on YouTube at The Karate Shrimp. Feel free to share my content with anyone you know who could benefit from it. See you next time.